The following talk was given by Jeffrey Shugan Arnold Roshi during a Fusatsu ceremony at Zen Mountain Monastery. Shugan Roshi is the head of the Mountains and Rivers Order and abbot of the monastery. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about our various programs, visit us online at zmm.org. Thanks for listening.
Fusatsu is renewal of vows. For those who have taken vows, it's a time to reflect on the vows. For those who have not taken bodhisattva vows, precepts. And I wanted to talk a little bit this evening about skillful means, which has been a theme running through our Ango sub-study of the Lotus Sutra. And it's such an important aspect of Buddhist teaching. We might kind of take it for granted, but perhaps we shouldn't. At the time of the Buddha's enlightenment, based in his own recollection, as he was reflecting on what happens now, he said, "The thought occurred to me that this Dharma that I've attained is deep, hard to see, hard to realize, peaceful, refined, beyond the scope of conjecture. It's subtle. It is to be experienced directly. But this generation delights in attachment, is excited by attachment, enjoys attachments. For a generation delighting in attachments, this and that conditionality, dependent co-arising, are difficult to see. This state, too, is hard to see. The resolution of all fabrications, the relinquishment of all acquisitions, the ending of craving, dispassion, cessation, unbinding. If I were to teach the Dharma and others would not understand me, this would just be tiresome and troublesome." But then he was appealed to by a great deity to teach that there were some who would hear, who would be ready. And so the Buddha said, "Having understood this out of compassion for beings, I surveyed the world with the eye of an awakened one. And as I did so, I saw beings with little dust in their eyes, and those with much, those with keen faculties and those whose faculties were dull, those with good attributes and those with bad, those easy to teach and those difficult. Some of them seen disgrace and danger in the world," which means no longer in love with samsara. "Just as in a pond of blue or red or white lotuses, some lotuses, born and growing in the water, might flourish while immersed in the water, without rising up from the water. Some might stand at an even level with the water, while some might rise up from the water and stand without being smeared by the water at all. And so too, surveying the world with the eye of an awakened one, I saw beings with little dust in their eyes, those with keen and dull faculties, those with good and bad attributes, those easy and difficult to teach. And so I declare, open are the doors to the deathless, to those with ears. Let them show their conviction." Open are the doors. Let us show our conviction. All along ago, we've been studying Buddha nature, that we all are Buddha nature. We have Buddha mind. All the qualities and virtues of an enlightened being. We all have all arrived here in the session, this evening in the Dharma, on our own paths. Some of those were straight. Some of them might have seemed crooked. Some circling, some hesitating, some certain. The important thing is arriving. These teachings and practices that we are so fortunate to have in our lives, we can think of as intimate words, intimate reports of our inner and outer landscapes, how things appear to us when we open our senses and take in the world. On a misty and foggy morning, in the midst of a great storm, on a clear, bright, cloudless day. They speak of the landscape that we are not yet entirely clear about. The teachings actually understand us, our nature, our mind, our experiences, our perceptions, our responses, our attachments, the whole thing, more than we do. And in a sense, that's our challenge, that's our invitation, is to meet those teachings of practice, in a sense, match them, their understanding with our understanding. Of course, there are many, many thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands who have gone before us. But just think about the fact that no one has gone your particular way. No one has gone the way you have arrived here and the way you will continue to go. And so for each person, each one of us, even though so many have come before us and there are so many reports of the path itself, for us, for each of us, each step is new and unknown. And so we take vows to hold us into the path, bring us into the path, to help to understand what it is we're doing so that we can do it skillfully. And so we are introduced to vows, we chant vows, if we choose, we take vows, and then we renew them over and over and over again, sometimes because we forget. But every day we should take them because they're our vows. And if we haven't received formal vows, that doesn't stop us at all from forging a relationship with these vows. And so we chant the names of the Buddha to invoke those historical and non-historical beings who embody different attributes of the enlightened nature, which really means us, you. When in the Lotus Sutra, it says over and over again to call the sutra to mind, to recite it, to copy it, to expound it. In this chapter on Avalokiteshvara, it says to call Kanon Bodhisattva to mind, single-mindedly. If you yourself are the sutra, then what does it mean to call it to mind? What does it mean to recite it, to copy it, to expound it, to uphold it? What does it mean to not slander it? All of those passages in the Lotus Sutra that talk about those who would slander the sutra. If you are the sutra, what does it mean to not slander it? If others are the sutra without knowing it, what does it mean to not slander them? Because the Dharma is not fixed, there's no fixed rule, it has no fixed form, it's true. Because it can't be co-opted or corrupted or bought and sold or owned or even rejected. And because we are nothing other, we're the same way. And as the Buddha said, our delight and excitement and infatuation with our attachments is pretty strong. And the views that support those, that make them make sense to us, that rationalize them, are compelling. And so skillful means becomes of the utmost importance. How do we begin to release, relinquish willingly, freely, because it can only be done freely, that which we still believe in, that which we still have faith in, those things that are still delivering us some goods, how do we relinquish them freely? How do we see, as the Buddha said, the danger within them, the danger of attachment, of pain and confusion, of harming others? And the precepts so then become a vital aspect of that skillful means. How to be skillful with our thoughts, our bodies, our words, our actions. What are the particular actions that we want to pay particular attention to? Because they have been shown throughout all of these generations to be those things in which human beings create the most binding karma, that both arise out of our afflictive emotions, greed, anger, and delusion, pride, and jealousy, but also then generate more of the same. And then how do we, because nothing is fixed, because no action, no precept has any kind of independent power, it's all subject to transformation, to think of it that way. Or we might think of it as it is all readily capable, able, waiting, we might even say, to be used differently. The same mind, the same body, the same capacity to think, to speak, to act. And so, in a sense, when we enter into training, we're sort of invited to the table of skillful means, where we sort of are introduced to the skillful means of the practice tradition that we are part of, that we're engaging in, that have come down to us, that we've inherited. That's what is passed down. So that we can, from the very beginning, as we study the self and begin to understand ourselves, we can see what is skillful for you walking this path that has never been walked before by anyone exactly like you, that responds to your mind, your body, your attachments, your karma, your views, your particular way of experiencing emotions, your particular way of responding to those emotions. And so it's to be clear in our intention, to establish our aspiration, so that we can know as we are practicing, are we moving in accord with the Dharma or not? Because in a sense, skillful means just means practice in accord with the Dharma. But the Dharma isn't fixed. It's not a fixed rule. The way to Siddh Zazen is not ambiguous. It's not ambivalent. It's not vague. But it's also not fixed. So that means at different moments, we have to make choices. We are making choices about how to practice this wondrous art, as Dogen spoke of it, in a way that is skillful for that moment, for this person, with this body and mind, in a way such that it is in tune with the Dharma, because that is our path, but also in tune with this body of the Buddha. Dogen said, if you want to understand Buddha nature, intimately observe cause and effect over time. When the time is ripe, Buddha nature manifests. So part of what we encounter when we study cause and effect over time is those things we have done that we're not particularly proud of, that we wish we hadn't done. And so we have the gatha of atonement to attend to those actions that we've created, that we cannot take back, but need to be attended to, need to be the energy of those actions, because the actions are gone, done, but the karma of those actions, the consequences of those actions continue to live. How do we know that? Because they appear in our mind as a memory, as a regret, as a burden. And to that degree, it creates a kind of a drag on our capacity to move forward. And so the gatha of atonement is skillful means so that we can turn towards those actions and attend to the regrets, because that's really the present manifestation of those actions. And perhaps move beyond to repair. To be skillful means to examine our life. How suitable is our life to actually practicing the Dharma? Sometimes a student will talk about how difficult it is for them to practice, and when they talk about what their life is like, it's like, yeah, no wonder. You're making it hard in just about every way you could. Sometimes a person doesn't have a choice. Their life is just difficult. And so to take that up wholeheartedly, Sometimes there are choices that people make to have a complicated or let's call it an abundant, a life of abundant activities or things that draw on them. And so that's a choice that will have consequences. So do that knowingly. How do we practice the challenges? How have we learned to practice challenges in our life? What are the strategies we've all developed? Because we all have them. Those are the strategies that are going to appear in our practice. Those responses, those rationalizations, those narratives, all the stuff that we see arising. Remember that these patterns arise out of repetition over and over and over and over again. And so seeing how we study the time and season of cause and effect over time, we see our past and present level of skillfulness or not so skillful. Session is a wonderful time to examine all of this because it's happening all throughout the day. All of these different moments where really nothing is actually happening, not much, not out here, but in there, their world's turning. And we're seeing something that arises. It's come up a couple of times this week. I mentioned that the first noble truth that life is dukkha, the Buddha said one way of understanding it is that you don't get what you want. And the emphasis is not on the object. Right? The Buddha didn't say, dukkha is not getting what you want, so go get it. He didn't say that. He said, look at the wanting. Look at the not wanting. Because that which is in front of you, in and of itself, is not the most important thing. For what is happening here? And so we chant the four vows, which is a universal, all-encompassing expression of our vows, of the precepts, of our aspiration. And so we return to them over and over again. We renew those four vows every day, right? We chant them every day. There are certain things that we do every day in practice that we come back to, right? Repetition. So what's the difference between that, creating that kind of a habit, and a habit that arises out of samsara? It's our mindfulness. We know what we're doing. We know what we're chanting. We know why we're chanting it. We're doing it with full awareness. It is good. And then in all those moments that are difficult, right? It's like being on a pivot point. Do I trust the Dharma? Do I trust my old way? Do I cut a new path? Do I go down an old, worn path? Do I do what is easy, but not actually? Or do I do what is difficult to move towards easy? And so to really appreciate how this moment, every moment in which that first noble truth is arising, holds the potential to show us something about ourselves. It is already, it can't hold it back, right? That's kind of the way reality works. It can't hold itself back. It's constantly exposing. We're like that too. Everything is constantly revealing itself completely. And so skillfulness means learning how to see. Reclaiming. Returning to. And so in the Lotus Sutra, the Buddha said that there are practices. He called them peaceful practices. Skillful practices. To be steady and persevering, the Buddha said. This alone is not enough. No single thing is enough. That's why there's an Eightfold Path. That's why there are eight gates. That's why there are a multitude of virtues. Because there are a multitude of obstructions. And our lives are a multitude, a cornucopia of what Dada used to call it, Dada Roshi used to call it, the whole catastrophe. The whole Megillah. But persevering, to be steady, allows us to move through everything that we encounter and to keep putting one step in front of the other. It allows us to move through without being dependent on how you feel today, how it's going, on whether this feels good or not, on your level of faith. In other words, it frees us not to be robotic. Why is it not robotic? Because we are awake, aware. All of these virtues rest in, depend upon awareness, mindfulness, concentration. That's what makes them virtuous. And so being steady, persevering, allows us to move forward steadily, without being dependent upon feelings, upon progress or achievement or the challenges. Those are just the present landscapes of this moment. Those are just what needs to be practiced in this moment. The Buddha said to be gentle and pliant, to be without aggression. We cannot realize Buddha nature by force. We cannot let go by force. We can let go firmly. So sometimes gentle is gentle. And sometimes it's fierce. What makes it gentle, it's not aggressive. It's not hateful. It's not destructive. It doesn't want to hurt anyone or anything. It just wants to move forward, to be true. So a path of peace means peace now, this step. And so to be skillful means to develop skillfulness within our moments of anger, of frustration, of self-judgment, of other judgment, of aggression, to see the perfection, to give generously, to affirm life. The Buddha said a peaceful practice is to see all things that are as impermanent, without any fixed nature. We give names to things, we recognize limits around things, we can speak of things as hindrances and barriers. That's all just language. Those are what the Buddha called convenient designations. But all of those things are not those things. Nothing stops even for a moment. The Buddha said, don't delight in others' faults or mistakes. Every action arises because of past actions, the necessary conditions for it to occur in this moment. So to practice in accord with time and season and observe cause and effect, as Dogen said, is to see into the karma. Not because that automatically resolves things, not because that enlightens us in that moment or even relinquishes our grasp, but it helps us to understand how things work. And because we're in the middle of trying to help things work skillfully, we need to know. And so we have a whole lifetime of experiences that we can survey, or they will come to you. Just stick around. They will come to you and show themselves. Look, see. So we have the chance of seeing, oh, how did that go? Is that something I want to continue, take refuge in, have faith in? What it was the inner working of that? I see the action. But what were the conditions that made that action possible? Outside? So if those actions, those conditions are present, we're alert to that. And we realize these conditions put me in a precipitous place. What are the internal conditions? Can we see those actually building up, moving towards, so that we can step in and shift? The Buddha said to be free of harsh judgment or contempt. The more we bring compassion, loving kindness to ourselves, it just makes sense. In the presence of the whole self, right? Not just being compassionate when you feel compassionate, or being having loving kindness when you deserve loving kindness, because you've been good, but all the time. Then it only makes sense that because we are training in meeting a sentient being who just happens to have your name, but just one of many, we're training in how to meet that being in loving kindness and compassion. To see the good, the Buddha said, free of jealousy. What the Buddha said is that there's no end to the good that exists. We don't have to worry about using it up. We don't have to worry about somebody getting more. To be free of deceit or manipulation. One of my favorite stories of Master Shui Feng, who heard about an old ascetic hermit deep in the woods, went to see them, talk to them, finding them, said, "What is your ascetic practice?" And the hermit says, "I don't deceive anyone. I don't deceive anyone. Living as a hermit. Who is he not deceiving? Who are they not deceiving? To be free of deceit or manipulation. To cultivate compassion, to cultivate loving kindness. These peaceful practices, simple, really, not so complicated, easy to understand, but not so easy to practice all the time. And these practices have a natural effect. They have a natural calming effect. They have a natural effect on opening the heart. That's what they do. They both arise out of that mind and arise out of that heart, but they also strengthen that, engender that. And so the Buddha said, if you, as a bodhisattva, will at times enter a quiet room and with a correct mental attitude, see all things according to the Dharma teachings, and then, rising from your meditation, you live this sutra for the sake of self and others, then you will manifest these teachings. You will harmonize all that stands apart. And your mind and the mind of those around you will be tranquil, free of quarreling and fear. Because it doesn't always seem to have such a perfect effect. We could say then your mind and the mind of those around you will be inspired or inclined towards being free of quarreling and fear. We'll have an example of a way, a path. The Buddha said, this I call the way for the bodhisattva to relinquish attachments, to liberate craving, to calm the troubled waters, and to untie the knot. Session, we bring ourselves, we have our seat, we have our responsibilities, but we are always practicing within the whole. And discovering how to be deep in solitude, to be deep in silence, without cutting anyone off or out. How to be attentive to everything that's happening around us as needed. And to be able to move in that water without getting lost to ourselves. There are 100 different ways in which that is happening throughout the day. And there are aspects of training, aspects of the form that are about just that. And we may not notice that that's what's happening, right? We may not notice that that's what, we may not notice that Everyone is waiting for us to settle ourselves, for instance, so the period, the Jigido can begin the period. Or waiting for us to finish fussing with our cushion, right, so that we can begin our bows together. We may not notice that, but when we do, it changes. Because then we realize, oh, I'm not alone. Other people are actually counting on me for something. Something simple, something small. But it becomes a way of being in the world, or we realize that's the world we're in, actually. And these simple gestures are showing us that. The way of the Bodhisattva relinquishes attachments, liberates craving, calms our troubled waters, and unties the ancient knot.
Thanks so much for listening. To find out more about our ongoing programs and residency opportunities, visit zmm.org.